This is Pure Decking for Thursday. I don't know what the fuck day is. April something. 18th, 2024. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game. And the more I learn about how money works, the less I think I know about the world. We have a madman. What's up, madman?
Oh, nothing much. I just finished listening to a very cool talk from an Argentinian president. Bet he can't be our president.
Did he have a chainsaw?
In some of his ads he did. In the talk he did not.
I'm disappointed. I wanted to hear it revving in the background. We have a fox.
Howdy.
What's up?
Same shit, different day.
And we have an RU.
Hey. I know a couple of phrases that'll get you sleeping in the on the couch with your wife, if you want to hear them.
Do I? <First one.
laughs> So what you do is you point behind her and go, fuck! It's not the biggest spider I've ever seen, but fucking close.
I've done that, but all I said was funnel web.
Funnel web, yeah. So currently I'm sleeping in the spare room. Because the coffee went everywhere, the laptop fell on the floor, and she jumped about 18 feet in the air. So she's going to the Olympics.
Nice.
It's like, wow, if I'd known you could spread your legs like that. Anyways,
Hey-o.
It's like, I was going to make that joke work. Then I realized I was talking about RU's wife. I'm like, well, wait a minute.
Hey, it's not me you got to worry about. It's her.
But I know. Why do you think I stopped?
You think about me and think about how much she puts up with. Hey, how hard that woman is. She has to live with me.
All right, I'm going to point out, unless she's one of the 2.0s, she's not as hard as some dudes.
No, she's not that hard, madman. I do prefer my retro models.
Stick with the classic.
Unmodified? Women. Yeah, classified, unmodified.
The ones with bonus holes.
Man, I'm original sorry about hardware. This. I hope this doesn't ruin your day.
Anyway.
All right, so let's get into this. Are you sent me this sir story, and yes, there's a technology angle to it, but mostly I just wanted to read it. It's from dailymail.co.uk.
I'd say there's a security aspect to it as well.
There absolutely is.
Trust but verify.
So, an Ohio man has been charged with murder after shooting dead a female Uber driver who had been tricked by scammers into going to his home to collect a package. The fatal incident, captured on the driver's dash cam, took place in the town of South Charleston, Ohio, on March 25th, around 11:25 a.m. William Brock, awesome name, 81, told police he had been receiving fraudulent phone calls from scammers, demanding money, and that they had been threatening he had been threatened by them in the weeks leading up to the altercation. On the day of the shooting, one of them called him telling him a relative was in jail. They demanded money from him, then placed an order via Uber for somebody to come collect a package from his house. The driver was Lolitha Hall, 61. She was unaware that the man was being targeted and thought the job was legitimate. When she showed up, Brock shockingly whipped out a gun and demanded she identify who sent her. My God. They've got all these pictures on the dash cam, too, and it very much is... the visuals are exactly what you expect.
Yeah, I watched the video of it.
Right down to the revolver. I mean, it's exactly what you expect.
Yep.
It's actually a really hard-to-watch video.
Yeah.
It's two very confused people not understanding what's happening, and...
in a very bad paradigm.
Yeah, just everything was set up to be wrong at the same time.
Yep.
Much I understand where the old man was coming from. He was hyper agitated, and his image looks rather frail, and she is a rather large woman.
Much of the scene was captured on the video camera in Hall's vehicle and released by the Clark County Sheriff's Office. Brock also allegedly took her phone and would not let her leave, although he never dialed 911 for help, police said. There was apparently a scuffle between the two, during which Brock asked Hall who she worked for, then shot her and shot her again, and then a third time after a further exchange. She was shot in the upper left side of her torso, one to the upper front left of her leg, and one to the inside of her left knee, and one in the center mass of her sternum. Hall tried to get back to her car when Brock shot her. Afterward, Hall can be heard screaming in pain while Brock threatens to shoot the other leg. Dude went fucking hard.
The old man was really agitated, dude.
Yeah. Hall was taken to local hospital but died while undergoing surgery, authorities said. Brock, who himself has suffered injuries to his head and ear, called 911 only after he had shot Hall. He told deputies, without being asked, as they put it, that Hall was there to take my money, take my money, unquote. Brock said that Hall attacked him after he shot her by slamming his head into the door of her car and then tried to escape, so he shot her again, thinking she was going to get a gun of her own. Quote, he didn't want to shoot her, but he thought she was going to kill him, unquote, the incident report said. Brock is being charged with murder because he didn't call 911, and because there was no active threat presented by Miss Hall at any time during the encounter, unquote. He posted a $200,000 bond, but could face further charges after the incident is investigated further. So, they don't focus on it very much in the story here, but back at the very beginning, told police he'd been receiving phone calls from scammers demanding money, and that the scammers were the one who sent the Uber driver. So, anybody who's been targeted by these scammers or had to listen to them, and if you haven't had to listen to them, go listen to some of these calls on YouTube. There's a couple of different channels that specialize in it, and there's also these guys that bait them. But it's really easy to see how somebody who doesn't really understand what's going on and is being targeted by these people, because he posted a $200,000 bond. So somebody's figured out this old dude's got money and he's 81, right?
Yeah.
So they're just harassing this guy constantly, trying to get money out of him, to the point that they're sending a driver out. And, a few weeks ago we talked about that news reporter who fell for the scam and gave somebody in an Uber a package.
So that's to say on that story, that disappeared the next day.
Of course it did.
Because it's bullshit.
But anyway, this
one's real.
My point is that is the thing scammers are doing, is sending Uber drivers out to collect packages. So, of course, the poor Uber driver doesn't know what's going on. She doesn't know that they've spun this guy up to 11 with all this bullshit, just harassing him constantly, right?
Probably claiming to be IRS, fucking demanding payment now, or they're going to take his house or something like that.
Well, they said they had a relative in jail, and if they didn't give her money, they were going to kill him or something like that.
Damn.
So
fucking that escalated quickly. I was thinking tax fraud.
Oh, okay. My own grandmother was a victim of this. She didn't fall for it. Well, they didn't get any money out of her, would be a better way to put it.
Yeah.
This was when she was still alive. They called her. They told her my dad, so this is on my dad's side. So they called my dad's mother and told her that he was in Britain and was currently being held in prison and needed money for bail. And that, they had already broken one of his legs. They were going to break the other one. Apparently, they were playing sounds in the background to make him think they were doing it. Now, so she was really upset.
I could imagine.
This is before my dad had retired. This is years ago. So she hangs up on them because she's so upset and calls my mom to understand what's going on. And of course, my mom can't understand her because she's really upset and doesn't know what's going on. finally gets enough out of her to understand what's going on. So she has to call Dad while he's at the office and say, would you please call your mother? She's, you know, almost inconsolable. She needs to understand that, you know, this wasn't real.
You got to think with these people's ages too, Morps, they grew up in a very high trust society.
Mm-hmm.
They don't realize how far that trust has fallen now, where you can't trust anyone.
So, you know, they've got this guy spun up to high heaven, and then somebody shows up at the house saying, I'm here for your package. I can see this guy pulling the gun out saying, who the fuck do you work for? Thinking he's suddenly in a fucking Bourne movie or something.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of shit these scammers do. And the scammers don't fucking care. You know, it's like, oh, you just ruined two people's lives trying to steal money. They don't fucking care. They're God knows where and never going to, you know, see any repercussion for it. They're just sad they didn't get any money out of the guy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's tragic. It's sad. And, I mean, he did kill her. I'm not saying it was right. I'm certain it wasn't right.
There's mitigating circumstances.
Well, he's got a, I don't know what, it's not an insanity to plea, but it's in that ballpark.
He could plea a lesser degree of murder.
Yeah.
But I don't think it drops it to manslaughter because she never threatened him and he didn't call the cops. That's the big one.
Yeah.
And it sounds like he had control of her for a while.
He pulled a gun on her.
He had time to call the cops and say, hi, I've got a kidnapper at gunpoint. Send someone to my house now. And unless he's in Chicago, a cop's going to be there in 3 minutes. That is a high priority call right there.
Clark
they drop
County.
What they're doing and they floor it.
Clark County. So, I mean, it is Ohio, but it's Charleston.
Yeah. He would have gotten cops there 5 minutes or less.
So, yeah, you're probably right about that. But again, I mean, I'm just saying I have a little bit of experience with the mindset these scammers put people in. It's not great. I mean, and when he understands what he did, when he gets out of the headspace he's in, he understands what he did, he's going to feel awful.
Yeah.
So.
And no matter what they do, even if it's lesser, like second degree instead of first degree, he's 80. He's spending the rest of his life in prison. It's yep. Whatever sentence he gets is a life sentence.
So. It's not. Like, you know, I'm not saying I don't want to see him punished, because I do. He did something wrong. But it's just sad because it's completely unnecessary and was just spun up by these jackholes just trying to steal money from people.
Yeah, my favorite way of dealing with scammers is actually covered in the Damon series of books. Track down their actual servers, put a can of thermite on top of them, and people in the building.
Yeah.
You guys have
scumbags.
Hey, let me stop you in your spiel for a minute here, buddy. Have you ever seen the movie Fight Club?
All right.
I'm going to need a smaller rubber band, Bill.
It's a Jason Statham movie, so if you've seen one of them, you've seen just about all of them. But Beekeeper, I like what that happened. He just goes after scammers and murders them.
Yeah. A terrible film, but great premise.
And you'd have a hard time convincing me scammers don't deserve it, because they absolutely destroy people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, anyways, I don't have an answer. I don't have a solution. I mean, other than, you know, if you have elderly people around, try to keep them up to date with what's going on. Try to help them understand you cannot trust anything on the phone. Of course, the problem is then it swings the other way, but, you know, where they trust nobody. But maybe that's better.
You know, that one, I think that might be better. Because it's not trust no one. It is don't trust people you don't actually know.
Don't trust them either, my man. If you've got bad news or something really important that you need to tell a loved one or someone close to you, have a password.
Mm-hmm.
Verify that it's actually you and not AI. Like, me and my wife have a password. Like, start and finish with the password. That way we know it's 100% true.
I generally get bad news given to me face to face. I've had people drive 70 miles to give me bad news. We don't do that over the phone.
Unfortunately, my country is very large, madman. It may take several days of travel for bad news.
So, anyways, yeah, I mean, that's definitely a good solution or a suggestion on the password. Because, yeah, I wouldn't put it past scammers today using AI to copy somebody's voice and, you know, call their family, pretending to be them, trying to get money out of them.
Yeah, if I have something that's weird, like, you know, someone's in jail, like, I'm gonna try to start digging for some more information from the person that's calling me. You know, like, try to ask them something that only they would actually know.
Well, again, that's what Fox, I'll get my head straight, was trying to say earlier, that a lot of these people grew up in a very different time.
Yeah. But no, it's something you educate your family on. It's like, hey, if you're getting a random call from somebody claiming to be a family member that so-and-so is in jail or something like that, like, call somebody else, verify, like...
What? Yeah. And
I guess it's kind of hard in your grandma's case. It's like, hey, we have your son in our jail. We're going to kill him unless you send us money.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of a hard, like, okay, let me talk to him on the phone. Let me give me the password, you know? You're not thinking straight in that situation either, but...
Well, that's the point. That's why
those people are the scum of the fucking earth.
Yeah, that's why they tell you something like that, is to make sure you're not thinking straight. That's why they tell you... That's why they tell their victims, oh, don't tell anybody. You can't tell anybody, because if you do, well, then the bad thing happens. So, it's education. The password's a good call. And... You know, if your family's down with it, this might be a good argument for those. I know there's a couple of different ones. I know on Apple it's built in. I haven't looked at Android lately for it, but where you can set it up to where you can share your location with your family.
Life 360.
There's a couple of different ones that do it, but you know, it's not the worst thing to have on. If this is happening, so that you can look and they can say, hey, you're not in Britain. I see you back where you're supposed to be, you know? So. Anyways, I don't know what else to say on that one other than it's just really sad.
Mm. It'd be nice if they actually put the resources down to track these scammers down, and the FCC did their job to prevent, you know, these outside countries from calling in and spoofing numbers and shit like that, but
it'll never happen. It will never happen because the phone companies make too much fucking money connecting the calls, so they have no economic incentive to filter them. And if you call India, Vietnam, Pakistan, of course Russia, China, any of the places these assholes operate out of, Nigeria, Egypt, you know what? Their law enforcement will say, oh, yes, we'll look right into it, and then round follow the report and hang up.
Mm-hmm.
They won't do shit. Or if
they're not directly involved with it.
They won't do shit unless it's something happening that's affecting people in their country, generally. So if the scammers aren't targeting, if they're in India and they're not targeting India, the Indian police ain't going to do shit about it unless you actually have the force of government from the United States showing up saying, hi, we're going to sanction your country if you don't stop this shit.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they do occasional show. India does do occasional show raids to shut these places down, but you know most of the companies doing it are operating the next day out of a new office and paying off those cops. So, of course, China and Russia are worse. They really don't care if they're targeting Americans. They do not care. But on the flip side, if I turn around and hack these fuckers back and they report to the FBI, the FBI will come arrest my ass for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like...
Well, who do you think sold them the information in the first place?
Well, there's that. I thought they were generally only interested in blackmailing members of the government, but, you know, hey, whatever.
That's their public-facing side.
You know, you go watch that. You go watch that questionnaire they did with Mike Johnson out in the hall, where he talks about, "Well, I went and talked in the SCIF with the security agencies, and they changed my mind on this." I'm like, "Yeah, what photo did they hold up of you with what dead hooker to get you to change your mind on funding them?" So, anyways. Yes, I was AO indeed. They're in government. They're corrupt. I don't care who they are.
Not corrupt, Morps. Compromised.
That too. I just wish they were better at hiding it. Like, at least pretend it's wrong. Well, you know what?
Epstein killed himself. Don't look any further, though.
Yeah. I can think of two names. They both end in Paul, that might not be corrupt, and that's why they're not getting anywhere. So.
Did he rape kids? But don't look any further.
Yeah.
We've got all this videotaped evidence, but we can't let anyone look at it. And
it's on actual videotape. Nobody has a VCR anymore. Sorry, guys.
I do.
So, anyways. Next article.
Yep.
Next article
is from darkreading.com. A third-party provider that handles telephony services for Cisco's Duo multi-factor authentication service has been compromised by a social engineering attack. Now Cisco Duo customers have been warned to be on alert for the following phishing schemes. It's pretty bad when the company you contract to do multi-factor to make you more secure is exposing your shit.
Mm-hmm. They, too, field diversity hires.
Customers were sent a notice explaining that the company handling SMS and VoIP multi-factor authentication messaging traffic for Cisco Duo was breached on April the 1st. The threat actors, that's the best time to have a breach, too, because half the people aren't going to think it's real. It's like, oh, it's an April Fool's joke, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The threat actors reportedly used compromised employee credentials. Once inside the service provider systems, the unauthorized users downloaded SMS logs for specific customers within a certain time frame, the company said. Cisco Duo did not identify the compromised telephony provider in its advisory. I could look it up, but there's only a handful of them, the damn things. Quote, more specifically, the threat actor downloaded message logs for SMS messages that were sent to certain users under your Duo account between March the 1st, 2024 and March 31st, 2024, unquote, Cisco said in its customer advisory, quote, the message logs did not contain any message content, but did contain phone number, phone carrier, country, state to which each message was sent, as well as other metadata, such as the time and date of the message, the type of message, etc., unquote. So for anybody who's not familiar, Duo, and I have used Duo in the past for a different company, and actually it was pretty good. Back before Cisco bought it, I haven't used it since Cisco bought it, so I don't know anymore. But it was a service you would put on top of authentication, so that you could do multi-factor and have some better control over all kinds of different things, really. But it was a way of instead of using the like an RSA token or the Google Authenticator or the little countdown numbers. Duo was an app on your phone that you could do the countdown numbers. You could also have it SMS codes. You could have it call people to verify through an automated dialer, which sounds like that's what got compromised here. And you could use the app with pushes. So it was, your phone just pops up and says, hey, is this really you trying to log in? You say yes or no if it's not you. And if you're an asshole CTO who doesn't understand how, you know, technology works, and you forget that your VPN is set to use Duo, and you leave your computer on so that when the VPN tries to re-authenticate because you've saved your password in the fucking box like a douche, your phone pops up for Duo, and then you call and report a security incident because your own fucking laptop tried to log into the VPN again. I'm not bitter. I don't know why everybody keeps thinking that.
Or you have the guy that gets his two-factor authentication notice. He's not logging in right now, but he knows if he clicks yes, he won't have to log in again tomorrow.
So he just lets him in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you've gotten the 3 a.m. phone call and had to dig through logs for 3 hours to figure out it was a jack hole too, huh?
I have not, but I've heard tales about it, probably from you, but those many beers ago.
I just finished this beer. That was sad. Anyways.
Same.
Breach follows two specific trends, according to Jeff Morgals, Chief Product and Strategy Officer for Savvint, Social Engineering Cyber Attack Success, and Focus on Identity Service Providers. Quote, there have been a number of public attacks on identity service providers, such as Okta and Microsoft, for the past few years, unquote. Margolis says, quote, you can also go back as far back as the RSA Secure ID token attack back in 2011 to see how far back these attacks go, unquote. Actually, I talked to some of the guys from RSA at a conference after their 2011 breach. They were telling us that the codes that were stolen were stored on a laptop and that did not connect to a network. It actually had its network equipment removed, is what he said. So I don't know if that means filled with goop or just, you know, disabled in software. It was stored in a vaulted room, supposedly, that was regularly checked. And apparently they did routinely find surveillance equipment and other things in, you know, around that room where they think, you know, where somebody was breaking in and setting up cameras, microphones, and other electronic minutia to try to get information about these keys, because these were the private signing keys to RSA. And I'd be like, man, I'd be concerned about that many people trying to get into your building. He goes, well, between the janitorial staff and the people who own the building and all that stuff, we can't really stop everyone from getting in and out of there, so we just secure that room as best we can. And I'm like, but the codes got out, so did somebody steal the laptop? He said, no, and there was no record that the laptop had been tampered with. So they don't know how they got out. At least that's what I was told back then at a conference.
You think something that value would be stored off-site?
I don't know about that. Something that valuable?
You either have like a vault somewhere, or you have your own vault inside your building that you have better control over.
Well, that's what it was.
This should have been, I guess.
It was a vault in their building, but they apparently didn't have full control over it. But so I said, so what did you guys do? And he said, well, about once a month when somebody reissues a new certificate, somebody goes in there with a flash drive to sign the certificate with the keys on the air-gapped laptop. And so either, you know, they thought either they had an insider that they haven't figured out who it was yet. Of course, this guy was telling me all this, and I don't know how much of it he was supposed to tell me. I don't know how much of it was bragging, but, so they either had an insider they hadn't tracked down yet, or somebody managed to compromise one of the flash drives they used for it. But somehow that private key got out. That was a bad day for everybody using RSA. You had to go resign everything, which anybody who's ever set up an RSA server knows what a pain in the dick that is. I mean, that's
where you almost have like a USB floppy drive and you copy the shit onto there just because it's so, obscure that, like, You get something that's just so odd that, like, nobody's writing anything for it. You know, it connects to a serial port or something like that where it's not immediately going to try to write to the disk and write protect it when it comes off the air gap machine. You know, you do a bunch of shit to try to keep it from... Bill from accounting just pulled his thumb drive out because we couldn't find the one we normally use.
See, I would have expected that's where you would have ordered some sort of custom hardware. You know, yeah, it's probably still running an Intel processor and, you know, whatever operating system under the hood. But I would think you would have extraordinarily custom hardware that, like, logs... That's like, you know, written to have microcontrollers logging every interaction over the one USB port and, you know, shit like that, so that you've got, like, you know, triple entry, you know, accounting tracing somehow, but somehow it got out. So it's also, quote, it's also important for companies to understand the reliance they have on third-party identity security companies, how an attack on these companies would impact them, and what mitigating controls are in place to detect and respond to events with their identity service providers, unquote. He explains, and that's true. I've got projects today where people are answering the questions on how are you doing IP whitelisting? How are you doing multi-factor? How are you doing this? How are you doing that? And they're pointing to the one service provider. It's not Duo, which means there's like one other one it could be, but I'm not going to say what it is because you're not supposed to really reveal publicly these things, but it's pretty bloody obvious if it's not Duo who it is. So if you're in that space. But yeah, when you throw down the stack of security regulations and requirements, they're pointing back to all these identity service providers to answer most of those controls for cloud services. So, and yeah, it was, they got the password of somebody who worked there and just went in and did it. It's a variation on a supply chain attack. So, but that's targeted. That's, they're obviously after something, you know, because they went after specific companies at this specific provider. So, yeah, there's some resources being thrown after that if that's the level they're going at. I think the running theme tonight is not trust no one.
Mm-hmm. I'd say that.
So, next article, unless anybody has anything else on that.
No, I'm good.
Yep.
Next article is from the Register. We're going to be bashing Microsoft again, because why not? Microsoft is trying out recommendations, ads for apps in the Microsoft Store in the Windows 11 Start menu, but only for a small set of U.S. beta channel Windows insiders at first.
Do you want people to move to Linux? Because this is how you get people to move to Linux.
Really? This might also explain why they were unwilling to install updates for people running Start menu replacements. The Windows behemoth is known for running ads in its flagship operating system. In 2022, the company released a build that displayed ads in File Explorer, which it subsequently backed away from. Windows 10 has long featured ads, so the prospect of Microsoft utilizing space in the Windows 11 user interface for its recommendations is not unexpected. However, it will frustrate users who interpreted the promise to make the Start menu great again as a commitment to improve its functionality rather than just adding some of, you know, adding what some might see as helpful suggestions. That's not, nobody sees these as helpful suggestions. No. This is Microsoft making money by selling ad space.
Correct.
The recommendations can be turned off and are limited to a subset of US beta channel Windows insiders who have opted to get the latest operating system updates as soon as they're available. Microsoft noted, quote, "We regularly try out new experiences and concepts that may never get released with Windows insiders to get feedback," unquote. However, its appearance in the beta channel indicates there is every chance the feature could be released more widely in the future. There are four channels to the Windows Insider program. The Canary channel allows users to preview platform changes early in the development cycle, while the Dev channel is aimed at enthusiasts and is used by Microsoft to incubate new ideas. Microsoft recommends the Beta channel for early adopters. It's followed by the Release Preview channel, where commercial users can preview fixes and updates before wider release. And on the Beta channel, Microsoft has said, quote, "Your feedback has the greatest impact here," unquote. And it has asked insiders receiving the new experience to, quote, "Let us know what you think," unquote. The reaction thus far has not been positive.
Shock. Imagine my shock.
Open source desktop outfit KDE was quick to post a plug for its Plasma desktop with the words, "Look, no ads." The recommendations come as Microsoft ramps up attempts to block several desktop customization tools such as Explorer, Patcher, and Start All Back. So,
what a bunch of cunts.
Yep.
Well, Microsoft, like many tech companies, has reached that point where they no longer have to compete and have a better product. They're the default the default answer for solving the operating system question. So they're no longer attempting to make the most user-friendly operating system anymore. They're now shifting to how can we squeeze every cent of revenue out of this operating system to make as much money as we can, because nobody would ever think to move to a different operating system because Mac users are weird and Linux users are nerds.
Well, they said the same thing about Internet Explorer, and then it got, you know, its market share devalued. Now, of course, they'll show you their metrics. It's like, oh, no, it's still the most widely installed browser because it comes default installed with your shit. That does not make it the most utilized browser.
Well, RU, you and I have talked about this a little bit, that we're starting to see more and more people moving away from just using desktop computers at all, that they do everything on a phone or a tablet, and if they want to play games, they play it on, you know, PlayStation or Xbox or Switch.
Well, that's what makes me think, how long before Xbox is going to show you ads before your game comes?
It already does that.
Yeah. I was saying that about a couple years ago.
Wow.
And they've got some games that they've released where the billboards inside the game are live ads, hence why you need a internet connection for your single-player game.
Well, that proves how far out of touch I am with phones and fucking consoles now.
Well,
consider yourself lucky.
Samsung is ramping up this ARM processor they've been working on, and they're saying it's going to outperform most of the Intel-based chips, Mac M1 stuff. So maybe with a change of platform, we might see a change of operating system, because by all accounts, Windows on ARM is a dogpile. So, oh, and by dogpile, I don't mean a sleeping dogpile. I mean a pile of shit. Mm. So,
I remember when dogpile was a good search engine.
Yeah, well, they also used a shit pile of shit as their icon, so it's irrelevant. So, I think you're going to see people wanting to move away from, you know, as Microsoft makes Windows more and more, the word would be enshittification.
Yeah.
As they continue to enshittify their operating system, filling it full of more ads, which I've been playing with Windows 11 on that Surface, you know, that I got a while back, and it is just obnoxious. With, you need to install this. Oh, give us more data. Oh, do that. Now, I've turned a lot of that stuff off, and I did notice a very interesting problem. I tried putting Classic Start on there because the Windows 11 Start menu has this recommendation section that I've turned all that off, so there's nothing in it. But I can't turn the section in the Start menu off, so it's got like this, I don't know, inch and a half of wasted space in the Start menu that I can't get rid of.
That sounds like a Microsoft feature.
And I can't. And it's like, okay, I don't have any way to make this Start menu actually all that useful to me, because I can't customize what's in it very well, because you just have your pinned apps and that's it. It's like, you know, folders, you can't sort them. It's like, you know, for as much as I rag on them, Windows 10 Start menu is actually fairly decent, which I think...
Well, by comparison, yes.
I mean...
Overall, yeah, no.
7 was decent too, but... You know, at this point, I really wish KDE would start releasing Windows builds again, because then you could at least customize your shit, but... I mean, it's just frustrating trying to do anything with that operating system, because any of the Microsoft stuff is just constantly after you. It's like you know, the really bad freebie Android apps that are constantly after you to subscribe and click on an ad and do this and I mean the whole damn operating system feels like that. Now I'm looking for it, so maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but
well, no, it's one of those things of like, well, people are used to it from all these apps they install, we might as well throw it in their operating system and bilk them for dollars as much as we fucking can, as we're greedy cunts.
And it's just really, I mean, you know, I've loaded up a bunch of other software, so it's not quite so bad. You know, you load up Firefox or a browser instead of Edge, and it's just, even without Adblock, it's just less annoying, because you don't get 13 pop-ups saying to join an Office 365 and share your diagnostics data with Microsoft and, you know, bend over so they can stick the nozzle up there. I mean, it's just...
Oh, God, configuring any servers that have just updated their Edge, like, do you want to import your browsing data? No. Do you want to build an app? No. Do you want to sell us your data? No. Do you want to build an app? No.
And I don't want the link to open up in Edge. I'm using some software that Edge doesn't play well with. Leave it the fuck alone.
Do you want to make Edge a default browser?
The nozzle. I award no points. And God have mercy on your soul. Anyways,
and all their little Microsoft pop-ups down in your Start menu, they're like, hey, we got a recommendation for you about this, or, you know, stock news or other. It's like, shut the fuck up.
I've turned most of that stuff off, or at least so I thought.
You turn it off. You have a Windows update.
And it's all back on.
Oh, look, it's back.
Like, yep.
I use the STFU10 as, like, I'll run that. You know, I don't even think my computer's had an update.
I'll run it randomly, and it's like, look,
all this shit's back on.
So my dad's got it the worst because it keeps turning OneDrive sync back on. We've disabled it. We've unlinked his account. We've done all this stuff, and OneDrive keeps turning back on. And what sucks about that is he's not paying for it. So Windows will say, "Oh, your OneDrive is full. You can't put anything else on your computer until you get more OneDrive space." And it's just like, what the fuck? It's like Microsoft is actively trying to prevent you from using your own hard drive unless you're paying them for OneDrive space.
Yep, because they're banking on the dumb end users that don't have, you know, somebody technically savvy in their family. Like, I mean, imagine if your dad was like just some random guy that didn't have somebody in tech to call. What's he going to do? Oh, I guess I'm going to click here to buy more OneDrive space.
No, he wouldn't. He'd turn the computer off and go do something else.
So he's smarter than the average bear. But
I don't know. I kind of remember how much memory or how much storage I bought on my computer, and it will tell me. Like, what do you mean I need to buy it? According to my computer, I have 8 gigs left. Back it? Somebody's lying.
Hey, but if your printer can convince you that it's out of cyan and you need to print a black and white and it's not going to fucking do it, and you've dealt with that, well, Microsoft's got some OneDrive space to sell you.
I tell you what, Static turned me on to these ink tank printers, man. Best fucking thing. If you've got to deal with printers, because they don't use a cartridge. They just you just fill up the ink from bottles built into the printer. And they come with a ridiculous amount of ink. So I tell you what, if you've got to have an inkjet printer, that's the way to do it.
I just use the printers at work for the last 15 years.
All right. Next up is from Ars Technica. YouTube puts third-party clients on notice. Show ads or get blocked.
Get fucked, YouTube.
Go fuck yourself, YouTube.
YouTube is putting third-party ad-blocking apps on notice. An ominous post on the official YouTube community help forum titled Enforcement on Third-Party Apps says the company is strengthening our enforcement on third-party apps that violate YouTube's terms of service, specifically specific ad-blocking apps, unquote. Google would really like it if you all paid for Google Premium or YouTube Premium. YouTube has been coming down on third-party apps, which often enable YouTube ad blocking. You want everyone to move to Rumble? This is how you get everyone to say fuck you and move off.
Mm-hmm.
The company shut down one of the most popular third-party apps, YouTube Vanced, in 2022. Vanced was open source, though, so new alternatives sprung up almost immediately. Vanced takes the official YouTube Android client, installs a duplicate alternate version with a bunch of patches, turns on all the YouTube Premium features like ad blocking, background playing, and downloading without paying for the premium sub. It also adds features the official app doesn't have, like additional themes and accessibility features, repeat and dislike buttons, and the ability to turn off suggestions that appear all over the app. Another popular option is NewPipe, a from-scratch YouTube player that follows the open-source ethos and is available on the FOSS-only store F-Droid. NewPipe wants a lightweight client without the proprietary code and millions of permissions that YouTube needs, and also blocks the ads. Rather than going after the projects, Google says it's going to start disrupting users who are using these apps. The post writes, quote, "Viewers who are using these third-party apps may experience buffering issues or see the error the following content is not available on this app when trying to watch a video," unquote. The company continues, quote, "We want to emphasize that our terms don't allow third-party apps to turn off ads because that prevents the creator from being rewarded for viewership, and that ads on YouTube help support creators and let billions of people around the world use the streaming service," unquote. Bullshit.
That is bullshit, yeah.
Ads on YouTube it's not about supporting the creators, because you can go look at the amount of money the creators have been making lately. They're all bitching about it. This is why every creator is advertising whatever the fuck VPN service or what's the one they're all doing now? They delete your shit?
No, I don't know.
I don't know that one.
Go delete all your private data out of the data brokers is the one I've seen. I mean, at least Raid Shadow Legends has backed off.
I did hear that Vance was actually had a thing in their app that would find the tagged area where it's like sponsor, because you can sometimes see it in their little search bar.
Yeah.
And it would auto skip it. So even them going off on NordVPN, Raid Shadow Legends, Ball Savers.
Yeah, they advertise that one too. That's a weird one to me. It's like, really? So. But yeah, they're going to just start flat out blocking anybody not using the official ads. That's where it's their apps. That's where it's going to go. We all know that's where it's going to eventually be.
I give it a week or two before these app developers patch around that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're going to have to eventually block it in the browser if they want to do that, because that's what they're all doing, is pretending to be a web browser.
Mm-hmm.
So. Anyways, next article is from TechSpot. I wasn't aware of this game, but you might, because it was a racing game. Ubisoft is removing The Crew from libraries following shutdown, reigniting digital ownership debate. So I've never played this game, The Crew. I mean, does anybody?
Either have I.
No, it's a Ubisoft title, so
yeah.
Probably saw that avoided my plague.
Lost part ways many, many moons ago.
Ubisoft just gave gamers a harsh reminder that we're merely renting access to our libraries. The publisher recently pulled the plug on the online-only racing game, The Crew, making it unplayable as of April 1st. No surprise there, the company had been warning this was coming. But some miffed players say Ubisoft went a step further by revoking their licenses to even launch the game through Ubisoft Connect. People who forked over their cash for The Crew claim Ubisoft snatched away the ability to access a game they rightfully purchased. When trying to fire it up on Ubisoft Connect, they're greeted with a message saying, "You no longer have access to this game. Why not check out the store to pursue your adventures?" Unquote. The game's also been moved to its own section of the library called Inactive Games. Apparently, you can still launch it, but it only plays a stripped-down demo version. Ubisoft would likely argue that since The Crew relies on servers that no longer exist, the game is effectively useless anyway. It's a fair point, but it doesn't make it okay to take back products people paid real money for, especially without warning. Some of the unlucky gamers were holding out hope of keeping The Crew alive through private servers run by preservation communities. With the files now unobtainable, seems that dream's dead. The disturbing part is just how much control platform holders wield over digital purchases. The fine print in those terms we all mindlessly agree to makes that crystal clear. Ubisoft subscription boss Philippe Tremblay has even said players will, quote, get comfortable, unquote, with not owning games. You will own nothing and you will like it.
They'll also get comfortable with going back to piracy.
Exactly.
As I've pointed out, if you're not going to respect my property rights, there's no reason for me to respect yours.
The whole fiasco. Exactly. Go ahead, go ahead, Fox.
I was just saying, they're saying, "Oh, we can't find these files anymore." It's like, may I introduce you to the high seas?
The whole fiasco has Reddit and other gaming forums erupting over the fragile nature of digital ownership. As one Redditor put it, quote, "You don't own any of your digital library. You just own a permission to download a copy, which they can revoke at any time they want or remove from their servers," unquote. Yes, that's true. For anybody who didn't realize that, just, go back a few weeks to Sony deleting stuff out of your PlayStation library. I mean, it was videos, but still. Another lamented this as, quote, "the saddest and most ruthless decision I've ever seen in gaming history," unquote. You haven't been paying attention very long. They also called for... go look up Nintendo's history with lawsuits. I'm just saying.
Their attention span is short.
Well, it's a Redditor, so it's probably somebody who's only been around a little bit. They also called for new laws to guarantee lifetime access to purchased games. Quote, "I will always fight for digital media. I love all the advantages it gives to users all around the world. But we need protection on the national or European level that when we purchase something, we have lifetime access," unquote. That will never happen. As gaming goes all in... Okay, and for why that will never happen, you have to fuck with too much contract law. It just... it would just get destroyed in court if you ever did that, or you would make it so ungodly expensive to release digital media, it just would never happen again. I mean, you would just kill it overnight if you did that, because the laws would be too draconian. As gaming goes all in on downloads, who's to say that major publishers won't start pulling shenanigans like this more often? Hardly a comforting thought for gamers or preservation efforts who are trying to keep older titles alive. Perhaps they're seeing campaigns like Stop Killing Games pop up. So, and what I mean by that on the it'll never happen on requiring lifetime access, what you're essentially saying is that once somebody's purchased a digital title, they have to be able to download it from your servers in perpetuity. And that's not maintainable. So instead, you would see all of these things immediately change their language to be, they just wouldn't call them purchases anymore, is probably what would really happen. I don't know. I might be misreading that. Go ahead, Madman.
I'm going to go with, that would be at least truthful. Like, we're not selling you something. We're letting you rent this long term.
Yeah.
Don't lie to me. But I think as far as laws that would fix this, once you stop supporting a game, it becomes open source. So anyone that wants to run a server can. Anyone who wants to download the game from their friend and make their own copy can. You are giving up your copyright to the game once you decide to stop supporting it, if it's something that must be supported.
That's an interesting way to go.
Because if I buy World of Warcraft and assume that I'm actually new to the game, which I'm not, I'm expecting to get months or years out of this. If it goes under the next day and I'm not refunded my full amount of money, I'm being stolen from.
Yeah.
So I get the source code for the server, or it's just posted somewhere so anyone can build their own World of Warcraft server, and then we run our games. And as far as
I don't know.
See this would be affecting a standalone game, because you can just say we're no longer selling that game.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that comes down to implementation details on how it's written, right?
Yeah. But,
I mean, I just as a general idea, I like it. I just don't see it happening.
Oh, it won't happen unless it's pushed for.
I don't like them throwing around the word renting of their games, because with everything going as a service now, it's only a matter of time before Ubisoft tries to jump on that bandwagon.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know Ubisoft is shitbags, but this is a slippery slope to a new level of douchebaggery.
Well, I mean, just got to start being a prick like me. Ubisoft did me wrong once. Never fucking touch them again.
Yeah,
and I tell everybody. You know? Renting games as a service is stupid bullshit, but that's where it's headed.
I don't know. When I was intending to rent games back in the Blockbuster days, I wouldn't mind renting a new title before I spent $60 on a new game.
That's another thing. People, stop spending $60 on a new game.
Mm-hmm. Don't pre-order shit.
Yeah, don't pre-order either.
That's fucking bullshit.
As people that play games, we've got to start getting fucking militant. I mean, absolutely militant. Just refuse to fucking buy it. Don't make complaining videos about this shit anymore. Everyone's sick of seeing your fucking videos. Yes, Asimov Gold, you fucking douchebag. Get out of my fucking channel. Stop complaining about it. Just ignore them altogether. They will soon get the drift.
Yeah. But I was going to make a point, though, that Madman, back in the days where you could rent the game, try it out, and then go buy it, when you bought the game, you got a disc, a physical disc that,
yeah.
Okay, and we're talking about first-gen Xbox, most likely. You could still play that today. If you take that Xbox out of the closet, put that disc in it, that game will still run.
Oh, not just first-gen Xbox. You could rent... I remember renting Nintendo games.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
But if I have to give credit where credit's due. I am seeing a lot of games coming out with prologues now that are free.
Yeah.
You get the first. So that's pretty much the same as a demo. So I am seeing a lot more of that, which is good.
Yeah.
But, you know, okay, I bought Baldur's Gate 3 on Steam, right? I haven't played it that much, but I did buy it. If that goes away tomorrow, I've got nothing. But I can still pull up all the old Final Fantasies, play them on the Game Boy, play them on the Nintendo, whatever. Because, you know, I've got the cart kicking around here somewhere. And of course, emulators and ROMs. But, you know, and I'm sure I've got discs for some of the game. I know I've got some PC discs floating around here somewhere for all the old games. But amusingly enough, because I've been getting into more and more of the retro stuff, all the Amiga games, all the Commodore games, all that stuff that you can still find, it's all the pirated stuff. It's all the stuff that was copy protected and cracked. That's what got preserved, because that was the only thing people could preserve.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we'll see that again and again.
Maybe it just wasn't that Commodores didn't get big enough that there was a retro store market for them. You're right. Whenever I go to a retro gaming store, I can find tons and tons of Atari games.
Oh, yeah.
But they're all the console games. I don't know if any of the early PC gaming got a big enough market for anyone to the floppy disks.
It absolutely did. The problem, Madman, is that those floppy disks have a lifespan. And not the same lifespan as cartridges.
Yeah, because except for the later end Nintendo cartridges, which I'm going to have to give Nintendo some props for this. One reason they were able to update graphics is in the cartridge, it wasn't always just the game. They would do hardware updates
stuff in them.
In the cartridge. So some of the lighter ones had their own power supply, like a little battery in them, that when it dies, your cartridge is fucked. But with the exception of those, I don't know of a Nintendo cartridge that's dead.
Those batteries are not immediately that hard to replace. I've replaced a couple in Game Boy carts. It's not that hard. You can replace those batteries and those carts will work fine. Unless the battery leaked and then the traces might need some work if they're recoverable at all. But you're correct about that. And actually, I mean, you want a really good example of that. Compare early NES games to stuff that they were making at the end of the NES. And then open up the carts and look at them. Because the NES, they had whole other processors in that cartridge along with the memory banking chips. So a lot of the animation you see on the NES is not even being done by its graphics chip. It's being done by memory banking the GPU. So it's changing what's in memory in real time. It's fascinating some of the stuff they were doing on those consoles in the early days.
Yeah, looking from Mario 1 to Mario 3. The little dancing mushrooms in the background where you're picking your world.
Oh, yeah, that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So, anyways, let's do this last story. It's from nextcar.com. Tesla owner calls police on Rivian driver using a supercharger.
Her name is Karen.
A Rivian driver got into a confrontation with a Tesla owner who appeared unaware that superchargers are now open to other brands, an incident that highlights the need for more communication from Tesla about the initiative, the Rivian driver says. The Rivian driver was trying to charge his newly delivered R1S at a supercharger in California when a Model Y driver approached him demanding to know why he was there, according to a post on the Rivian owner's forum. Quote, he then pointed at the red Tesla vehicle charging only signs and insisted that it was illegal for him to be there and that he was calling the police.
I hate California.
Yeah, he said he was taken aback by his extreme reaction, quote, the Rivian driver writes. Tesla gave Rivian access to its network last month at eligible stations. Ford EVs can now also charge superchargers, while EVs from General Motors, Volvo, and Polestar are next on the list. For now, non-Teslas need to get an adapter to charge. In 2025, car makers will start making EVs with the Tesla-backed NACS port instead of the CCS ports they currently use, making adapters unnecessary. The R1S owner in this case decided not to wait for Rivian to ship him a supercharger adapter, as the company is sending them in VIN order, so he'd likely be at the bottom of the list. He instead purchased an aftermarket adapter on Amazon, since I am impatient, unquote. The charger ports on non-Teslas, meanwhile, are also in a different spot on the vehicle, meaning they may have to parallel or park parallel to a supercharger, taking up two spots. That's what happened here. Quote, I had no choice but to park in a way that blocks two stalls, unquote, according to the Rivian driver. Ultimately, the Rivian's owner adapter did not work, so he decided to leave and head to a nearby EVgo charger. That's when the Tesla driver confronting him, trying to, quote, steer the conversation towards a constructive dialogue, only seemed to aggravate him further, unquote. Bullshit. This is two entitled pricks yelling at each other in front of an EV charger. There was no constructive dialogue here. So the Rivian driver got in his car and left, quote, as I drove away, I saw him angrily talking on the phone, presumably to an unfortunate 911 operator. Okay. There's signs that say shit like EV charging only, only for Teslas, stuff like that. Because like a lot of companies put that in. Low emission or EV parking only here. It's not actually legally enforceable, those signs. The most they can do is try to get your car towed. But it's a pain in the ass for all involved because it's not like, you know, a city parking, you know, city ordinance. It's just somebody's sign in their private parking garage kind of thing. So if you call the cops because somebody's parked in front of your EV only sign and it's, you know, just a sign in a parking spot, they're not going to be very quick to come out there.
No.
Oh, even if it's an enforceable one, they're not going to be very quick to come out there. You're making the lowest priority possible call.
Yep. So and you know, I think Fox had it in one. It's, you know, her name was Karen, or in this case, I guess his name was Karen. But yeah.
We'll call him Kevin.
Okay. Well, whatever. So, anyways, it's just funny that the EVR fighter people are fighting with each other who gets to use what charger. I know some people at work who have Teslas, and they say people waiting in line for the superchargers get snippy with each other about it.
Shocking.
It's like, are you at 80%? If you're over 80%, you need to leave and let somebody else use it. You know, it's just, it's like, my God.
Or what?
And they want this for everyone.
I mean, I've seen people at gas pumps do stupid shit and get fucking all road ragey and shit like that.
Yeah,
like,
but there's enough gas pumps around that if somebody's being a dick at one, you can say, well, I don't want to be near the guy who's likely, you know, playing with lit cigarettes near the gas line. I'll go to the one across the street. So. Or in my case, I look around and see if I see some asshole with a laptop in their car before I pump gas. And I have driven off from gas stations because I saw somebody sitting there staring at a laptop parked next to a gas station. I'm like, nope. Nope.
Not today, scammer.
It's like, do I know that's what they're doing? No. Am I taking that risk? Not really. So, anyways.
Oh, because every fucking card has a chip in it now.
Yep. Anyways, we'll do something silly for this. So this project on GitHub is amazing for a couple of reasons. It's called Exodus. And it's called Exodus is a port of the Temple OS kernel for User Space Linux, Windows, and FreeBSD. Exodus makes Holy C a user space general programming language that isn't just the exclusivity of virtual machines. It contains a mostly full-featured GUI from stock Temple OS and a CLI mode, which has found uses for running the network servers automatically and building Exodus kernel itself. It's a compatibility layer for Windows, Linux, and FreeBSD to let you run Temple OS code outside of Temple OS. And part of the reason I think this is amazing is because in GitHub, on the little right, lower right, where it lists the language, Holy C is the language it's written in for the most part, with 3% of it being in regular C. So GitHub recognizes Holy C as an official programming language. I love it.
Awesome.
So this is people continuing to develop Temple OS, because why not? I mean, why not? I love it. So, host file system is integrated, so it's kind of like DOSBox, but it's for running Documentation is in /t:/server. Mostly Orthodox Temple OS GUI. Orthodox. It's got CLI mode, community software. It's got some networking in it. So been some disputes on whether Temple OS can have networking or not. To borrow the man's words, God did not ban networking. Terry didn't implement networking in stock Temple OS because of the line number restriction. But he's got a post to Terry saying God did not ban networking. I love it. I love it. So if you want to continue playing with Temple OS, which you actually should because it's an amazing project, in all seriousness, I mean, Terry had his problems, but Temple OS is an amazing achievement that he wrote all of this basically on his own.
Yep.
He wrote an operating system on his own. Called it Temple OS.
Under mental duress.
Yeah. And arguing and yelling with at people online when 4chan would decide it was time to give Terry attention, and you know, being confused as to who's from 4chan and who's a glow in the dark. And I love that glowies and glow in the darks are now common vernacular. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you, Terry.
Okay. That's all I got. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday, mostly. Peer decking website, the IRC, Al Hazard, Cycros, myself, Sardonyx, and she. Fox, closing thoughts.
I had it written down in Notepad, but there are too many fucking Microsoft ads on top of it. I got nothing.
All right, Madman, closing thoughts.
Only video games that start to be written in Temple that could possibly replace Windows for many users.
I don't know if Terry wrote any games.
There's games in Temple.
Drawing program.
Other Is people it? Have added okay. games, yeah.
Okay, cool.
So, close us out, are you?
I have nothing.
Thank you for your continuing patience during this transitional zombie apocalypse. Your satisfaction is very important to us.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm kind of retarded.
Man, I'm sorry about this. I hope this doesn't ruin your day.